All right, let's get straight into Eternal Beta Podcast, episode 74, November 16, 2021, a little bit after 8 p.m. I am Steve, a.k.a. Audiochron, and with me tonight, TV Dave.
Oh, thank you for having me, sir.
George Rangehunter, AU.
Pleasure as always.
And the Mikester.
Ahoy.
The awesome foursome of video gaming on the EBP. Welcome, everyone. Big week. Huge announcement today. We may as well just jump straight into that. Microsoft's 20th anniversary of Xbox event occurred, and they surprise announced, well, there was a few leaks leading up to it, the Halo Infinite multiplayer beta would go live immediately. Kind of shocking everyone a little bit, and I've been playing it. Mike, have you been playing it?
I played one quick map before against bots as a just to get settings going.
Yeah, the tutorial thing or bot training or whatever it's called.
Bot training or something. Yeah, I just clicked on that. It's like I just wanted to start straight away.
I had a handful of matches of just quick play. So there was a few. There was like capture the flag. There was just like a team deathmatch type one, I think. Another one where you capture kind of all the same modes as Destiny, really, which were ripoffs of Halo anyway. So, it was cool. It looks good, I thought. It plays quite well, I thought, and it's free. I think it's going to be a pretty major hit, at least in the short term, given what's happened with some of the other shooters.
I think it'll probably have some reasonable short-term success, but I'm not yet convinced about long-term success because it's an arena shooter and they have done very poorly over the last 4 to 5 years.
Longer than that too though, Mike. I mean there was a good Halo competitive scene back in the day, but that's not really translated to modern Halos at all, has it?
No, it probably hasn't, because the original Halo competitive scenes for the most part were community driven. However, Halo did tweet out that they are doing a full esports thing with significant prize money, overall comp structure to be released tomorrow. So we'll probably have some more information about that on next time we chat. And they are looking like they're supporting the Australian scene as well through a couple of contacts that I know. So it could be good things, but again, I'm not convinced on how successful it's going to be just yet, other than that you're going to get a whole bunch of people around our age that are nostalgic for Halo.
Oh, I don't think it's limited to our age. I think it goes quite deep. Like,
People 5 years younger than us as well.
No, I'd say more like down to 10 years younger than us at least, which is like a significant group of people. And then there's
everyone's working full time upwards.
Well, and then it's free to play, right? So then there's all of the youth that, you know, don't necessarily buy in. But I don't know, I just think you're underestimating or underselling rather a little bit the hugeness of Halo in terms of Microsoft's brand and Xbox brand generally, and how well renowned in the console space those games are. Despite the last couple being less than stellar.
I agree that the Halo is a massive brand. There's no doubt about that. I'm just not sure that people want to keep playing arena shooters because they just haven't been popular for a long time.
Fair enough. I guess we'll see. It's still in beta at the moment. It's, you know, just dropped today. So it's going to still stay in beta status, even though all of the progress you make in the beta will carry over through to the main game. So get cracking, I suppose. I don't really have much else to say about it at this point, so we'll maybe just move on from that, given it's so fresh. Sticking with the multiplayers, though, we also played a rival shooter, you might say, in Battlefield 2042. We used our 10-hour EA Play trial to play, so neither of us have purchased it. I don't know about what do you think so far of 2042?
I think it's good. I think it's got a lot of potential. It's a little clumsy at times at this point. A lot of the kind of issues that sort of linger from title to title and just in a design, like audio seems like loud but unclear, which is pretty typical of Battlefield games in my experience. So like you get good sound, but you just can't distinguish a lot of what's going on. It's all just kind of noisy.
There's something up with the audio for sure. Like, it is really sparse, and it's hard to tell footsteps whether they're yours, someone else's. Like, sometimes there's none. Like, it's just something's odd there. And like you say, the sounds are really bass heavy and kind of overblown, so like they happen and it's really like intense, but you also can't identify those sounds where they are very well, like positionally.
Yeah. And the gunplay is okay for me. I've seen a lot of hate for the recoil or the spray that guns have being quite random. And I don't typically use full auto as much as like a DMR, for example. So I haven't had too many problems with that. People take a lot longer to drop in Battlefield 2042 than they have in previous Battlefield titles, which kind of leans me to thinking they're sitting more in the, I guess, towards COD rather than a traditional Battlefield time to die, as in, like when you put a few bullets into people, they drop pretty quick.
Yeah,
whereas now it seems like you need to put maybe one or two. So, yeah.
I feel like there's also hit reg issues going on as well. Like, there's been numerous times where I tried to take someone down and like my bullets were just going through them, like it wasn't affecting them at all. And then all those times as well when you kind of come around a corner and you're just immediately dead. So like network lag, definitely that was happening to us, I felt.
Yeah, and it's probably a little hard to tell which is which at times in terms of hit reg, because you don't have enough experience on any sort of a clean server to determine what should hit and what shouldn't hit a lot of the time yet. And admittedly, on the scale of 128 players, it's going to be very hard to get very crisp netcode going. But that's a choice that DICE have made in making such large maps.
Yeah, so that's the other thing with the huge maps I just want to mention is, like, there's a lot of walking around as an infantry. Like, there's long distances between points of action. And that's a little concerning. This is, by the way, this is just all in one of the modes, right? Or at least, All-Out Warfare, which is the conquest kind of mode. Yeah. There's also All-Out Warfare Breakthrough, which is kind of like rush mode from previous titles, but kind of just pushing one way. So you run out of tickets. Or they run out of tickets.
Yeah, they're both good modes. I think that Breakthrough is good. I think as well that in both of those modes, again, vehicles seem a little strong at this point in time. Hovercraft specifically seem a little ridiculous. They need a nerf of some description. And I probably what I would think would be the best way to go about it is that if you put a reasonable amount of bullets into the hover part of the hovercraft, the actual, inflated air part of the hovercraft, then that should start to leak air, or like degrade pretty rapidly after that, without necessarily having the vehicle blow up.
Yeah,
realistic physics, you reckon?
Yeah, so basically, like, one of the things with the hovercraft is it seems it's very quick, and that's hard to get a good shot on if you're an infantry as a counter. And again, there's probably an aspect of people not having everything unlocked yet. There may be counters that exist that are a lot stronger against hovercrafts than what a lot of people have access to at the moment, being so early in the game. But they just seem very quick and have too many hit points for how easily you can shoot them. Yeah. So they're just a little bit overpowered, and not even the weapons on them are overpowered. It's just the fact that you just zoom around running, hitting people to death effectively.
Yeah, and you can be super accurate with the guns on there as well, which makes it's kind of really steady, and it seems odd compared to other Battlefield titles where it's usually really hard to shoot from a vehicle because of how jerky it all is. Yeah.
Overall, it plays pretty well. I don't mind Conquest.
What about Hazard Zone?
Hazard Zone is really interesting, actually. I think it's got quite a good amount of potential.
So it's more of a Escape from Tarkov style extraction mission mode where everyone goes in, tries to grab as many of these things as they can, and then get to an extraction point that what pops up every few minutes, you can go to the extraction point.
That's correct. Yeah.
But so, like everyone wants to go to the extraction point at the same time, right? So.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that mode's pretty cool. It's probably got a small amount of esports potential at this point in time. I think it could be good for that. It's pretty intense because people, like, you go from, I guess it's kind of like a battle royale in that sense where you go from, you know, running with your squad to not a whole lot happening to maybe three people just happen to turn up at a, you know, objective at one point in time, or three squads worth of people, and then it gets pretty cool from there. So it's an interesting mode. I'd like to play it a little bit more, but it's a thumbs up from me to start with.
Yeah, I'm shit at these types of game modes, so I have to learn it a bit first before I can comment, I suppose. But did seem like a good different way of playing. And the last way of playing Battlefield 2042 via the portal, I haven't tried yet. So
I played a little bit of Bad Company 2 Rush mode.
Right.
Because I used to play quite a bit of Bad Company 2.
Yep.
Rush mode specifically, and I played the map, which is a desert map, which has a train kind of line throwing through it in the middle. There's sort of a three sort of sectors or something. I can't remember what it's called. And, I mean, one of the issues with that is that you're playing Battlefield Bad Company 2 and not all the, like, controls, like, work in the same way as the other modes in BF 2042, because it's what happened in Bad Company.
Oh, actually different controls. Yeah, right.
Not actually different controls, but in terms of the way, like, I'm trying to remember what it was specifically, but how in terms of, like, when you switch weapons, something does or doesn't occur. Those sort of stuff can still exist in the old mode, in Portal. Right. So it's a little jarring switching from one to the other and things not happening the same or consistently between, like, weapon switching, for example.
Yeah. So the Portal mode, quite a lot of editable, like, you know, people can go in and create their own, like, rule sets and things that happen at certain times or at certain points in a map, and kind of a whole, like, creative suite, right? So it'll maybe blossom into other cool modes that we haven't thought of yet, or what do you reckon about that potential?
Yeah, because you can edit quite a large range of variables, and there's lots of old content as well that I think Portal has the potential to provide really good longevity, and it's going to require some effort on DICE's behalf to pick and discover the good modes from what people have created to then feature them so that you get enough people into those
scenarios.
This is what happened in Overwatch, because they did a similar thing in Overwatch and it was quite popular, but people in the community would quickly figure out a great mode, but you would have to discover it by random.
Yeah.
And then eventually they figured out, oh no, we can find the ones that are kind of popular and then put them as a featured part of, like, the arcade type deal. So I reckon what DICE could probably do is have the Portal mode, but maybe above that Portal selection is, you know, the Portal game of the week, whatever it happens to be. You know, like snipers only or something that on a tiny map. You get the idea, and then it's a quick jump into that game. That could probably extend people's interest in the Portal over the traditional mode and hard zone.
Mm.
1-2.
Well, so overall, we've kind of flipped a little bit on 2042. Last time we signed off with, could be the turnaround of the year. And I don't know if I'd go that far at this point, but it's definitely much less worse than what we thought might happen, right? Like, after the beta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The beta was shocking. It was really bad. It's turned around quite a lot, to the point where I'm considering purchasing it. I'm not quite 100% sold yet. I'll probably give it a little bit more time. But I think it's going to turn into a pretty solid title and a worthy title in the Battlefield series.
Absolutely. And we welcome Nick to the podcast. Welcome, Noclus.
Hey, fellas. I was just thought I'd surprise you, make your day, and say hello.
Hello.
I have no agenda.
Okay, cool. Well, if you want to just jump in at any point on commenting, feel free.
Thank you.
Excellent. Moving on. from Battlefield 2042. Another big name title, George, you've take the lead on this one. Forza Horizon 5. What do you think?
Spectacular.
Really is, isn't it?
Yeah. It's exceeded what I was expecting. In some ways, I was trying to keep my expectations low. But at the same time, you know, I was very hopeful that I'd get something I'd love, and that's what I've got. And what's been amazing for me is to see just how much life it's injected into the sim racing and driving category in general. How many people are embracing it who traditionally would never embrace a Forza type game.
Like meaning you generally run with quite sim heavy people, and this is a little indeed. Bit more to the arcade side. Yeah,
indeed. Well, the people who were generally sim only, and also people who have been so disillusioned by previous experiences with Forza that they had pretty much sworn off it. And I've seen multiple instances of people coming in super toxic, going, Forza Horizon 5, oh, this is going to be good, isn't it? And turning around going, oh my God, I love this game.
Mm.
It's been quite remarkable. And a huge factor in this has been Game Pass, because everyone's like, oh, it's too expensive to buy, you know, or maybe I'll try it when it goes on sale. And then everyone else saying, oh, just get Game Pass for $12, or if you've never had Game Pass, it's $1. Oh, really? Yeah, just get it, try it, and if you still hate it, then you can hang out in our Twitch chats and shit all over it. But until you've tried it, you know, don't say shit.
Absolutely.
And they've all turned around and been super positive about it.
So what's the most attractive feature of this title compared to, I mean, there's a lot of things from Forza Horizon 4 and 3 that are still, you know, there, and they've maybe even grown a little bit into this fifth iteration. Is there something that jumps out at you as like spectacularly or done very well?
Is it weapons? Is it banana peels, turtle shells?
There is car horns, which has been a feature of the series.
So look, I mean, I think the most important features of any car game, I mean, number one, the one thing that Forza always gets that a few other titles can is the big licenses, the big names, the variety of cars, right? So that's a given for a Forza. Where Forza have needed to improve has been their physics, their sound, and their force feedback. Like, Forzas are always pretty, and this one's exceptionally pretty. But the sound has been disappointing recently. It's been stellar in the past, but its recent entries in the series have not been so good. But this one is amazing. The physics are a nice improvement and a surprise. And nobody expected the physics to improve, because we all know we're still on an engine that started off life in Forza Motorsport 5. Hasn't been updated really, but they've improved the physics, and key for most of the more hardcore sim type people is a force feedback on a steering wheel. It is, it's really, really transformed.
And they've got settings for it, and they've got like, I saw you playing with that on one of your streams.
So it's amazing. Look, it's Forza, it has issues. It, as I said, we're dealing with an old engine here. And you can see the issues that it's got, but you know, peel away the layers, and there is something amazing to be experienced underneath it all.
Let's go to Mikester quickly, and what do you think as a kind of more of a first time Forza Horizon player? I mean, you've touched others in the past, right? But you've been playing a fair bit of this one.
Yeah, I played Forza Horizon 4 for a bit, not a massive amount, but I put a reasonable amount of time into it. I don't find it particularly like a significant leap over 4, really. On terms of the force feedback for the steering wheel, I don't have a wheel, so I'm not going to get any of those sorts of benefits. It has been a while since I played 4, but the physics seem fine. But again, nothing groundbreaking compared to 4, in my opinion. It's a good game, don't get me wrong, but there's quite a few small things that annoy me about it or playing it. At one point, I was doing a championship. I wasn't really sure that I had entered a championship to start with. I thought I'd just picked another race, but fair enough, I did. But then it didn't filter me to say to go to the next point in the championship specifically or anything. So when I loaded back into the map, I just picked another race that I thought I could do. And then it's like, oh, you're going to cancel your championship if you do that. And then I was like, well, what championship am I doing? And it didn't highlight the championship to me, which is just kind of confusing.
Mm, it just kind of does that thing where it's like, you got to do this one, this one, this one, and then it's amongst the sea of all of the rest of the things on your map. So without filtering for it, it's hard to kind of remember where they
are. Yeah, exactly. And if I didn't know which championship it was and like, or I missed it or whatever, because, you know, like I'm not a huge expert, but, you know, if a casual player is jumping in, that could be quite confusing if you're not very used to how Forza kind of forces you down things.
Yeah, sure.
And one time I finished a race and then opened up the map straight away to click, you know, somewhere to go on the next one. And then it said, yeah, sweet, go to this race. And then it closed. And then some other story thing popped up over the top of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't look. Yeah. And I was like, what? Okay. Well, I guess I'll go there then. And then started this whole other thing.
It's quite intense about that, isn't it? Like, it really just throws things at you. And it's like, hey, now this is happening. Oh, by the way, check out this. Yeah. Go look for this thing over here.
And it, like, cancelled what I was doing. Like, cancelled what I planned to do to go and do this thing. And I didn't want to do that in the first place. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm doing this now. And then the next time it popped up, I figured out there was, like, a third option that was very, like, design-wise intentionally small to get to cancel off this. But I figured it out the next time. And that was annoying. And then, like you said, Steve, they kind of force you down the story mode, in inverted commas.
The big scripted events, leading you towards those.
A Barger race. And then they're like, good job on doing the Barger, but don't forget about the other stuff. No, it's like, well, just like back off here, right? Like,
I know there's too many things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great part about the game, that there are so many different modes and races, formats and all that sort of stuff. But it's like, it just assaults you with all these different things and forces you down these paths all the time while also claiming to be open world. Which it is, but then it isn't. I guess once I've gotten through the story aspect of things and more into like the seasonal sort of stuff, it'll be better.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with the game. It's quite a those. Oh, and the scripted events. Sorry, I'm starting a rant here.
That's all right. Want to hear all the different sides of the stories?
The scripted events are so tedious.
They're really corny, like, as well, right?
They're like, so bad. And that's, and there's these constant, like, massive jumps, like, you know. And there was the one early on where there's some, like, motorbikes in there and you're racing against motorbikes. And then you see them, like, you know, zoom across just in front of you and then do a flip and you're like, oh, yep. And then eventually, you know, you're coming up to the finish line and guess what happens? At the last possible second, you win the race.
It's a feel good game, right? Like, it wants you to feel good. It wants you to, you know, everyone to enjoy it the same way, but it loses some hardcoreness while doing that, obviously. Hey, Noclus, have you been playing Forza Horizon 5?
I had a couple of spins, yeah.
Yeah? What are your impressions of it so far?
Very pretty game. I was just trying to knock over any tutorials, getting ready for some multiplayer.
Yes, but multiplayer is a bit of an issue at the moment. I've unsuccessfully or semi-successfully tried a few times.
Yeah, I haven't had a go yet, but in terms of, like, I don't think I'll ever play it single player again. But it's cool. Looks pretty and makes a good vibe. Like, it's, you know, it sort of feels like you're at a car race when you're playing it in some other country. I thought the how much they're throwing Mexico at you is just really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. On the same token, like, I also feel that after a few hours in the game, you're like, there's so many English people. Like, this festival is so English. I mean, like, that is canonically, right, part of the story is, like, it's from England and they're moving around all these countries. But I kind of feel it loses some of the Mexican-ness when it's when it's so English.
Well, I hadn't got to that point.
Chap, dude. Mexico is rather grand.
It is a little like that.
But, yeah, it's cool. It's a big time for Xbox right now between, you know, the hype for that and Halo, so yeah. I think it's all good. Yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm not playing a car game. I have to drive to work.
Fair enough. My impressions are fairly positive. Like, I'm a good 20 plus hours in already. In the week, I think it's been out, and pretty much wrapping up the Horizon Festival stuff. And like George has said previously, like it opens up more after that, and the seasonal things, the player created things, the club events,
basically all the stuff Mike was talking about is like the stuff you do once and then you never see again, because you get to end game and you're not doing stories, you're not, you know, you're not getting interrupted with stuff, you're doing end game stuff, and that's how it works. So, and it's also interesting for me to hear this perspective, because I think, you know, that's how I felt when I tried to join you guys in Destiny. I was constantly like, the game's trying to tell me to do all of this stuff, and I'm like, I've got no idea where to go. What's this? What the hell is that? Okay, it's telling me to do this. That's how I felt in Destiny. I was completely lost all the time. Stuff was getting shoved down my throat, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. What is this?
I have the same feeling with Destiny,
So, painful. So, yeah, and you know, so I see that perspective, but I feel like after a couple of rounds of various games being like that, I sort of learned that, okay, you know, there's a core game here underneath these layers of, you know, we want to show you how the game works. There's always going to be layers of that. Yeah, especially with a big game with lots of content, they want to show you how to get to stuff and what it's about and how the mechanics work. And if there's a lot of mechanics and there's a lot of stuff to explain, and they're going to choose different methods to explain that to you. But yeah, once you get it, it's all about how you what you make of it afterwards.
Yeah, I think it's dropped. It wasn't completely buggy. Like, there are some online connectivity issues and things. There's a hotfix coming for it. It hasn't broken the game necessarily, but so it came out quite well. It looks great. The photos people take look great. You know, like, everything about the game is fun and you know, just inviting. It's super cheap and easy to get into. So, like, I feel like this has been a success story because of the way it's been positioned in the market. And it's like, at the moment, it's like the highest rated release of the year on like Open Critic, Metacritic, stuff like that. Like, it's just getting 90 pluses across the board. I feel it's pretty deserved at this point, but yeah, there's a long way to go with a game like this. Like we said, there's all the player created content and challenges and things like that, that seasonal content that come out. So plenty of time to discuss Forza Horizon 5, but I think we'll move on from that because we want to keep going really quickly.
One more point I want to
quiz about,
George.
Okay.
Fast travel. This annoys me to no end. So you get fast travel to hubs, but it costs you credits. And then you go around and
you can,
get all
the fast...
You can
go to the hub and your home for free.
Carbon the home for free, yeah. Like, no, because it cost me money. It cost me credits.
You did it wrong.
Not money.
You did it wrong.
I just hit the thing and it said fast travel and I was like, sure.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Just give me a countdown from 3 and put me at the start of the race. Don't make me drive to it.
But,
well, it's open world, right? Like,
no, you know, no, I'm sorry. I can't go to a cafe in it. I can't go to anything like that. It's not open world. It's just one endless car driving map. It's not open world.
The point of a fucking game is to drive cars.
Yeah,
but you race them.
That's why you drive them. It's not just racing.
We're not Burnout Paradise here.
Well, I would like at least like the option that if I don't want to have to, if I'm at one side of the map, right?
Where do you get mounts? Do you get given mounts in an MMO immediately when you start the game? Normally,
I don't play.
No, but you do more than just ride the mount.
You do more than just drive a car.
Yeah. I thought you'd just tell me that's what you do.
It's the main point of the game, but there's plenty of things you do.
I'm busting your balls.
I know, because it's not a game that you like, so you'll take the piss out of it.
I just said I prefer Counter Down to 3 and Drop Meet the Star.
Yeah, so what you want, Nick, is you want Forza Motorsport 7. That's exactly what you want.
This is not Motorsports.
Yeah.
I want Need for Speed 2 Windows 98 edition. Thank you.
Fair enough.
No, Need for Speed Hot Pursuit you want, mate, not 2.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Need for Speed Underground 2.
Hot Pursuit's actually dropping for free, I think, somewhere. I saw, so keep an eye out for that. Might be Prime Gaming, something like that. It'll be dropping free soon. So
Nick wants a Need for Speed 2 remaster. Dave, I suspect he may be in on another certain remaster that's been going on recently.
Well, I mean, I think everyone's heard about it and had a look at it, but you know, big ups for Rockstar for giving us a GTA remaster trilogy. I'm nominating that now for an early game of the year. No game this year has given me as much entertainment as the remaster trilogy has.
And you haven't even played it yet.
Haven't even played it and don't intend to.
Yeah. No. I've put some time into San Andreas, and it's I'm here to tell you that it is not a great experience. And if you were thinking of dropping $90 or something to buy the trilogy, I would hold off.
What's wrong?
Maybe
with
even
it?
Skip completely. Oh man, where do I start?
What isn't wrong with it?
Yeah, what isn't?
I've never played, so I don't know anything about it. But do tell.
There's a number of threads in the Discord if you want to hop on and have a look. But basically, they got the mob who did the mobile ports, some of the mobile ports of GTA games, to redo it. And the goal was to upscale the graphics, make it look nice and HD and playable,
and move it to Unreal 4. So they had to pull it out and put it back in somewhere else.
So even for little things like, say, the jokes on the signs, right? They haven't actually got an artist in to do each of the signs. They've merely just upscaled them and we think they've used an AI to read the text and then re-put in the text, which means that a whole bunch of text has been mangled and the jokes have gone.
What?
Yeah.
That's their first start.
There's lots of typos in there. Yeah.
The next part is basically is that whatever physics interactions that the AI and the cars have is just totally gone. You'll be in a cutscene and cars will come and swerve in and kill characters.
Yeah, there's flat out kill characters. Heaps of janky stuff going on in that sense. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Definitely. Some vehicles will just magically accelerate like crazy.
Did Rockstar outsource this?
Grove Street Games is the Grove Street Games did the mobile ports, and that's who they've subcontracted this out to. And it's really surprising that they would be so kind of careless with the quality control to release it like this. I feel it's really, really strange of Rockstar, who normally put out top quality stuff. I mean, it's been quite a while. Like the last thing they put out, Red Dead Redemption 2, was like, you know, scoring like the highest of some ever games, you know, in terms of review scores and things, and it's quite loved.
You can go deep into that because, you know, 10 years ago, they were dropping a game every year. You know, they were awesome. And then GTA 5 comes along and they just want to make it a live service. And now all our games are gone.
Well, put it this way, right? If you're on PC, you couldn't even play the game on launch because they have their own launcher and that launcher was broken on launch.
Yes, so they pulled it from sale on PC for a little while.
They pulled it for sale afterwards because they realized that they didn't have the rights to some of the tracks in Vice City anymore, and they didn't want to pay for them, so they pulled the tracks from the playlist. But the tracks were still in the game,
right, in the files.
Okay. And of course the final joke is that the Hot Coffee mod, you remember Hot Coffee mod and all of that palaver? That's still in there now. Been re-added.
They moved it. That's great.
But you know what's funny, when they took Cyberpunk off the PlayStation store, you could still play it
if you'd already bought it.
This time they took it off the store. But you can't still play it on PC right now. Which leads me to my question. If you were stuck on an island and you could pick from two games, day one Cyberpunk or day one GTA Trilogy, which would you pick?
Yeah, that's a tough question.
Cyberpunk. It ran fine on launch for me, so I didn't have any issues.
Right. We're not playing it on console, are we? Console seemed to be the problem there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's only on Game Pass. San Andreas is on Xbox, so I've been playing it on my Series X. I had technical issues, especially with HDR, and generally the brightness in the game, like the whole brightness contrast thing is, even in SDR, is just really weird. It doesn't look right. And the rain effects are so intense that it makes you, it's just this constant haze of white just falling across the screen, and it's all around you. Like, it's 3D, but if you move the camera or you turn, like, as you're moving around, it kind of moves in, like, a really grating way that hurts your eyes. Like, it's just...
It's not... It's very nauseating. Imagine just, like, solid textures of rain coming down in block-like patterns, and those blocks will rotate with you. But amusingly, it won't rotate on water. So if it's raining and there's the ocean behind you, the rain will actually go behind the ocean.
Yes. There's
one of my favorite bugs that I've seen so far is the one that's in GTA 3 at the moment, where if you're driving a car, Dave posted this one, and you wiggle it like the F1 drivers do when they're trying to keep their tires warm on the warm-up lap.
Yeah, back and forth.
If you do that, the car increases in size the longer you do that.
What?
How does that happen? How does the model grow?
That's insane. I'm 10 or 12 missions into the game. Like, you know, I've been playing it a bit. Like, Jeff came over the other day and we took turns playing. But the shooting, like the lock-on for the shooting is just feels ballsy. Like, it's just all fucked up. I don't know. It's not right. Like, what they've done is subpar and I don't like it. And I wish they would put the originals back on for sale and just be like, we're pulling this to fix it. That's how bad it is, I think.
Well, as we know, Rockstar don't have any money. I mean, they've made no money off GTA 5.
Yeah. Or Red Dead, yeah.
Yep.
So, anyway, Dave, what about Barrow Trauma, Dave?
Previously in the Discord here that I was interested in trying to see if Barrow Trauma was any good, because it sounds great, it's got good reviews, but I know it's one of those indie-style games where it works well in cooperative. Like, you'll be on your submarine, in this case, a Barrow Trauma, and there'll always be one or two extra positions on the ship than the people you have playing. So the aim of the game is to try and get everything on the ship done with the less than people than ideal that you would have.
Running between stations.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always a bit dangerous because particularly if you're playing by yourself, you've got to rely on AI and you've got to see, you know, you've got to get enough people to play it cooperatively. And like a lot of people who like these games and play them, but they've got very poor taste because they're uniformly mostly awful.
Right.
Just ignore the word uniformly and mostly there. They obviously mean the same thing. But it was a free weekend for Barrow Trauma this weekend, and I hopped on and I tried to play some multiplayer with my partner, and I couldn't even get the multiplayer working on a Mac to a PC. Her game just froze and wouldn't let her character interact with anything. I played it a little bit by myself, and I did basically two trips from one station to the next, and it was just slow, dull, tedious garbage.
Rubbish. No wonder it was free.
So glad to got that out of the way. Another game I can yell and sneer my nose at, so I'm happy.
They have a big update coming or something like that, right? That's why it was free, because there was some sort of update.
They're going to add, I think, a whole bunch of, you know, Cthulhu-style things, bigger entities, not just fish.
Right.
Mega fish.
Yeah, cool. But, so not a fan. Not a fan of Barrow Trauma.
No, it's first of all, like, so you there is an underground network of submarine stations. You take your submarine from station to station, trading or doing jobs and missions, those sorts of things, and you get more money to get a bigger ship, And like literally on my second go at playing by myself, I went on a mission there, and I got ambushed by one of the bigger fish underwater there, but he went to the part of my submarine that didn't have a gun yet.
Right.
And I couldn't get him off. I couldn't get him out of the way of the submarine so I could shoot at him, and I just died. And like, I'm going, well, this seems to be poorly designed.
Right, yeah, that seems rather odd when it's kind of part of the main thing that you're doing.
But no, what made me happy though was I found by accident that the next DOSCathlon is coming up.
Okay, yeah, that's DOS-based games speedrunning stuff, is it?
That's right, yeah. So I had a go at this last time. It was around probably about 2 years ago, and there are 10 DOS games, each with probably short winning conditions, and there was a blind race on last weekend, and there's going to be a full race on in early December. Of the games that people might know of, there's Oregon Trail, Jazz Jackrabbit, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles DOS version, Dune 2, the RTS, Descent, Dark Forces, and Commander Keen 4.
What a lineup.
That's a huge lineup.
That's some cracking games.
Yeah, so if I get motivated enough, I might try and practice a little bit and try and compete.
Are you going to stream again?
I'll stream my practices if I feel up to it.
Very good.
Yeah, so that'd be interesting. I would like to do it because I think, you know, like, literally all those games I've read out, I've played with the exception of Oregon Trail. There are a couple of other ones in there that I haven't quite heard of before and some modern new DOS games. But otherwise, yeah, that's going to be great fun.
Yeah, keep an eye on Evil Commie Dictator on twitch.tv.
And the blind race is on Retro Gaming Live TV if you want to go and watch that.
Yeah, awesome. I've been playing, and this is another Dave-inspired moment, of XCOM 2, War of the Chosen.
Oh, you've been playing it?
Woo!
I have been. I've been nice. Playing a fair bit of it.
Nice.
I don't have my numbers here. Maybe Goggle will tell me. God Galaxy will tell me. Well, more than 5 hours at least. I'd say it's probably closer to 10. Yeah, into my first ever attempt at XCOM 2.
You're 8.7 hours in, sir.
8.7. There you go. Yeah, great. I love it. It's fantastic.
Hell yeah.
How did I not play this game before?
Unknown.
Enemy unknown. Yeah, and then Enemy Within was an add-on for it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I own that, and I would have only touched that a few times. I don't think I ever sank a decent amount of hours into it, but for Axis, I should have known. One of my favorite developers of all time, especially strategy games. War of the Chosen is super enjoyable. I haven't yet in my time, except for this one mission I'm currently at, save scummed anything. But I've worked out that essentially you definitely need to do that. So I didn't want to lose my characters. I got myself into a tight spot in a really tough mission, and I was like, okay, right, I need to either accept that I'm going to lose these people, or just heavily save scum and reload until I get myself out of it. And I managed it. I got out of it. So now nice. I need to reassess and be careful about my movements on the field. So yeah,
it's odd. Yeah, a lot of people didn't like XCOM 2 when it came out. They thought it was a bit aimed at the casual market after the success of Enemy Unknown. They didn't like that. You know, it's all a bit all a bit too easy, and there's lots of abilities. And by the time you get to the end of the game, you just have so many abilities. It's not funny. But War of the Chosen is quite nice on top of that, and adds the aliens have captured and trained up super skilled soldiers from the first game, and you'll face them off as you go along, and they'll occasionally interrupt your missions and try and knock you out and steal a soldier and all those sorts of things. Okay. That's quite good fun.
I was wondering what the War of the Chosen part was compared to the base game, and that makes sense now. Yeah, I can see how that is. That and some of the other things are features of the update.
I have only one dislike about War of the Chosen versus vanilla XCOM is they changed one bit of music that I loved, and it was the pre-deploy, the deploy music where you're picking your loadout, you're picking, you know, which soldiers you're going to send out. In the version of that music in the original is one of my favorite bits of video game music. And they change it. And what they change it to isn't a bad piece of music, but it's just not the same. So I every time I'm playing War of the Chosen, I wish that that original music would play, but oh well.
The soundtrack is amazing.
There's a good news though, George, and that there's a mod to put that back in.
Oh, really?
Of course there is.
Yeah, so I haven't got into modding yet, and that's something I'm going to leave till probably the new year. How essential is it to get into modding in terms of how far through the game you are? Would I only do that if I started a new game, or is it something that I should add?
No, it depends on the sort
all the
of
ones
mod.
I've sent you. Yeah, all the ones I've sent you are quality of life mods, making the gameplay easier.
Yeah. Okay, so I can add to add them in anytime.
Yeah. The things like extract all are just wonderful. You know, and getting the extra information, all of that sort of stuff, really good.
Yeah, cool. Because I'm definitely going to do that. but I'm just enjoying the vanilla experience of War of the Chosen as well at the moment. So just getting my head around how everything works.
It's all got workshop integration as well, so it's all incredibly easy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see. Yeah, that's cool. So
the info stuff is really good. It helps you make better decisions about what you're going to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sweet. Thanks. On top of that, and strategy gaming wise, I've been not too deep, but playing a little bit of Age of Empires 4, and even did some multiplayer with the Mike Star. What did you think of the multiplayer aspect of Age of Empires 4, Mike?
We played together.
We didn't last very long, right? It was probably a 15-minute, 20-minute round.
Mike,
yeah.
How much history do you have with Age of Empires?
Yes, I have done.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not a strategy person, but I thought I'd give it a crack because I know it is a beloved series. Although, generally speaking, when I do chat to people about it, they're always like, oh, I didn't used to play it and it seems okay, I guess, compared to other titles. That seems to be the vibe I get. But I gave it a crack and I can confirm that I'm not a real-time strategy person still.
I've always wanted to be an RTS person, but I just suck at it. So, age in particular, I especially would suck at.
Put it this way,
George. In terms of how much I suck at strategy games, my favorite real-time strategy game was Warcraft 2, and that's hands because down. I knew the cheat codes.
What?
And I would play the level. And I had him on board for like half a second there. I would play the level. I would, spend some time accruing stuff, probably doing everything very inefficiently and not doing the right things, then start to get stomped and go, ah, screw this. I want to beat the game, so I just cheated. I will state that I was like, 8 at the time.
It's tempting. Uh-huh. Have you tried it out, Noclus?
Age of Empires 4?
Yeah.
No, not yet. Not yet. It's installed, ready to go, but haven't.
Okay, cool.
Yet.
We'll give it a go. I think what we need is we need 4 of us on to play each other, like, or fight each other, because with the AI, like, at least on normal, it was just like, it wanted you to know what you were doing already and have your build order ready and, like, kind of sending everyone from the get-go because we were just too far behind too quickly. Like, within a few minutes when they first started sending troops, we were already too far behind to fight them off properly. And then we were just, as soon as we could generate people, it was just all too slow. And, it just escalated. So we were getting stomped. Both our cities were getting stomped. So we played me and Mike versus 2 AI. I'm playing more of the Norman campaign. I'm still going through that single player. And the videos are great. Like, the way it sets up the stories and, like, it's really enjoyable. Like, they've aced it in the single player mode, at least, as a storytelling experience and also a mechanics experience, like teaching you kind of how different things work and putting it in context of historical context as well, which is fun.
Awesome.
So yeah, that's definitely worth checking out for that. Next on my list was It Takes Two. So I've been 1 hour at a time, sometimes less, sessioning this game with my partner, and we're really getting into it now. It's more attractive as you get further in, like the interplay between the two characters and needing to work things out. It's a really good experience to play with someone, with a significant other, like, most likely is the best candidate for this game. But a close friend would be just as good. It's a very cooperative experience of trying to puzzle solve and get yourself into the right place, as well as some light platforming elements and, you know, kind of that sort of thing. It's not particularly great with the dialogue, and, you know, it's a little bit kind of hammy and corny and stuff like that, but like a bit younger than probably the age of people that would be playing it. Do you know what I mean? But sure. I suppose that keeps it open for kids to play it, I suppose, as well.
I'm going to give it a go soon.
Yeah. But it's great. Like, Phoebe's loving it. I'm loving it. I think that it shouldn't be forgotten in terms of the Game of the Year conversation as well, because I think something like this, where it does kind of require a co-op experience, can often get left behind in Game of the Year stuff. Unless it's a multiplayer thing with, like, you know, your Valheim or something like that. Speaking of which, Mike, we're wrapping up our Valheim for the moment. We took on the final boss.
Yeah, and it was a great success as well. So we have now finished all of the current content for Valheim, with a few updates that are still pending, and we'll probably revisit them as they sort of come out.
Yeah, Yagluth, is it?
Yep, the name sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. He was a cool-looking dude.
Yeah, it was a very visually impressive boss as well. Hats off to the Valheim team for putting together what is a pretty good game overall. The boss wasn't terribly hard. I think we only lost one person. I think we had one, maybe two deaths during the boss fight, but we were appropriately geared for it. We weren't running in under-geared, and we had a good strategy as well in terms of weaponry and tactics and things like that. So,
My favorite part of the bosses in Valheim is, like, you're playing this lovely little game, like, there's music, it's all soft and, you know, nice, and sometimes it's a bit darker and stuff like that. And then you get to a boss, and it just turns into a metal concert. Like, it's just full on, like, like, just gets heavy and, like, dark, and there's lightning, and, like, you just, like, is Metallica here? Like, what's going on? Like, this is so cool.
And then if you haven't turned down your screen shake, your screen looks like it's like currently having an earthquake.
Yeah.
It is very cool as well. It's a thoroughly good game, but it has played out its life. There's not anything more to do.
Needs
more content for now. But there's some cool updates in the pipelines, extra biomes, more ships and things like that. But they're a small team, so it's going to take a while for new content to come out.
I do wonder, like, where it goes in terms of, like, okay, sure, they spend another, you know, 3, 4, 6 months even, push out, like, this, you know, so another substantial content update. How long can they keep kind of people coming back to do it again, like to go through it all again, or to join? I don't know, when does it, at some point does it just become like, okay, what you guys really need to do is, like, build, like, version 2 that is just, like, a much bigger game, more ambitious game, ways.
I read the AMA they did it on Reddit with a bunch of the devs, and that's definitely not what they're going to be doing.
Yep.
They have they've got a very considered content plan for Valheim, and then they'll hit 1.0 once they finished doing the content, and they probably won't do much beyond that. I think they've said no to things like adding in quests to give you, like, more to do when you have finished the content. So, you know, you could do, like, go and kill, you know, 10 trolls and then get a reward type stuff is not going to come in. So I don't think they are going to do anything like that. I think they're just going to stick to their current dev plan for Valheim until the game is done, which will probably be at least another 12 months, I reckon, from what it kind of the vibe I get from the AMA. And then they'll think about doing a different game or something else, or perhaps then starting a whole new process for Valheim 2 if they were to do such a thing. But even then, I don't think they might do that. I think they might come up with a new idea.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I'm kind of concerned with, is that, like, I burnt out this second time through. We did start again, from scratch. So I did burn out because I was like, man, we've already done this. Like, we've done everything. And yes, it's slightly different. And there's like, you know, more different recipes and there's more different, you know, kind of bits and pieces. But ultimately, it was still the same experience. It was still the same. Go in there, you know, every spare hour of the day you've got and grind away. But everyone helping each other and providing different, you know, resources to the group and stuff like that was cool.
I certainly lasted longer than, say, you as well, because I didn't play it the first time through. So that, that certainly helped. But I have no appetite to restart whatsoever. I will want to jump back into where we currently are and then go and do the new content, you know, farm everything we need in the next biome and that sort of stuff, do the next boss and then probably put it to bed. I'm keen to do that content, but I'm not keen to start again or start doing creative mode or anything like that. It is a little limited. I get a kind of similar sort of feeling that I get about doing like playing Zelda again. Zelda, a much better game. Not that Valheim's bad, but Zelda is an incredible experience. Breath of the Wild, it is. Fantastic game. But it's quite big, and I would. I don't think I would get enough out of it to playing it again. Certainly not in the short term.
That's it. There's some games like, say, Red Dead Redemption 2, like once you've played through that and you've spent your 100 hours or whatever, you know, maybe not that long, but, you know, 50 hours at least to go through it, like, it's exhausting. And also you kind of, it's all familiar. And then so going back to the start again, it's like, oh, God.
And the other thing that you've got in something like Red Dead Redemption 2 is you have a story there in that. You don't have a story in Valheim.
Yep. Yeah.
So there's no engaging aspect that probably, like, compels you to go back and perhaps... You know, maybe there'd be different options in, you know, other games, you know, have different dialogue options and things that you could explore. There's none of that. It is very much that survival-based thing. But it's a cracking game.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Really
enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed it. Great theme, good graphics.
Do you feel that, like, the way we talked about it and you kind of opted out or, like, didn't have time at the time the first time around... Do you feel like it lived up to, you know, in terms of how we talked it up before?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Really good game. And I can see why it got really big really quickly because it has executed quite well. And I don't know how much changed from when you guys played it to when I changed it, but it's very well executed. And again, this is probably an ethos of the developers, that they have a certain vision and they create their vision very specifically and they stick to within a limited considered lane for what they want to do. But at the same time, in terms of that's for main content, but outside of that, it's just go for your life.
Yeah.
Which gives you some guidance as to where to go next and what to do. But then... you don't have to do anything as well. There's no sort of pressure to do anything in any time frame. And
oh, yeah. You could just be hanging out, farming, you know, exactly. For as long as you want. Yeah, you don't have to progress.
You make yourself a cool little house, that sort of stuff. So, I think it's, great game. Looking forward to playing the new content, but won't pick it up until the new content drops. And I don't think there'll be any this year at least.
Indeed. All right, let's just do some quick bits and wrap it up for tonight, I think. So I'll start off with the Xbox or Microsoft's 20-year anniversary of the Xbox conference, as we mentioned at the top of the show. They also dropped news that they are adding another 70 backwards compatible games across Xbox and Xbox 360 kind of era titles. Added to what you can now throw the disc in a current Xbox Series machine and play with enhancements and such, which is really cool because that program that they had is one of the most awesome parts of their backwards compatibility approach, is being able to throw in games you still got on your shelf or in a box somewhere, and now they're in 4K or they've got auto HDR applied or they run at 60 hertz now if you want. Those type of things is really cool. However, they did say it was the last set they will be doing of backwards compatibility due to licensing. Like, they've kind of run the kind of gamut of what they can do at the moment. So hopefully that's not 100% true, because there are some emissions there. Like, I would like to see Project Gotham Racing 4, I think it was. That would be good. And there's a few other, you know, titles.
That'd be a licensing thing probably, right?
PGR exactly.
Use licensed music?
Probably, yeah. So that's probably the limitation on most of the things that they haven't done there. But you can look up the list. It's quite an expansive list now of things that they've done. And, you know, you want to go back and you want to play Fear, you want to play some of these.
Fallout 3, say.
Yeah. Fallout 3, yeah. And on console, where it was previously a 30 FPS, you know, experience back on your 360 or something, then now it can be 60 frames a second at 4K, or actually, I'm not sure if it can be at 4K at the same time or whatever, but like, usually with these FPS boosts, they do reduce the resolution slightly. So that's something to be aware of, but it's an option. You know, you turn it on, you don't like it, you turn it off. You want to try something else, or you can just run it stock. But at least you can play it, you know. You can play all the way back to the original Xbox stuff. That's cool. Dave, you put in a few items here?
Yes, so I've got some hardware news.
Oh.
And you probably need a sting for that.
Whoa. Yeah.
System status.
Something that I was kind of reading during the week, I didn't quite realize exactly what was going on, but the new Intel processors, the Alder Lake ones.
Is this about DeNova? Apparently
it turns... Yes, it is. So some of you have already heard of this. But essentially the way they work is they've got certain cores that are designed for performance and certain cores that are designed for normal tasks. That sounds pretty good. Yeah. Well, ENP cores, yeah. So the problem is, as it turns out, is that if you send instructions to the ENP cores, they are returned differently. And DeNovo then thinks that you're trying to alter the code that comes out of them and says, no, you're trying to hack into the game.
Eek. So DeNovo, the anti-piracy tech that gets out of the games,
The workaround is now you use scroll lock to turn the performance cores off into normal mode, basically.
Oh.
So think of it as a modern turbo button for your 486.
DX button, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, cool.
That's incredibly funny, I thought.
And this just works by default in Windows to do that, or they added it as a patch?
I think, no, it's a setting I think you might have to enable in the BIOS. I don't quite remember the whole article. BIOS,
yeah, right.
But I think that was very funny indeed.
Totally. It's an interesting launch as well, Dave, now that you've started us on this hardware front as well, because the Alder Lake are performing quite well, so their high-end performance is solid and is above what Ryzen is being able to do.
Mm.
But the
mid-range as well.
12, say again?
The mid-range as well, the 12600, 12700, yeah.
That's 700, yeah. Yep. 12700. 12600 is reasonable. The 12700, I think, is the pick in terms of price for performance, but it's not unusual for the range. But the 12900 pulls 240 watts. For comparison, the 5950X does 140, I think, by default.
Yeah. Significantly less. Around
yeah. Yeah, like almost half. And the 12700 pulls 160. And even the 12600 pulls 140, I think it is, or around that mark. And for comparison, the 5600X, which is a similar price range to the 12600, pulls 65.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, these you know, they're performing really well, but man, and they're chewing through power. So not only do you need a large power supply now for your 3080, etc., which, you know, pull 250, 300 watts, or your 3090, which pulls even more, I think, up to 350 watts, you're going to have to add another 240 watts on for your CPU as well.
Yeah, and the heat that causes too.
Yes, quite hot. Yes, George.
Yeah, I mean, well, this could be a taste of things to come if you have seen any reports about what the 4000 series is going to be like. We're getting reports of absolutely enormous power draws there. I have
the NVIDIA 4000 series. Are you talking about?
Yes, NVIDIA 4000 series. Yeah. So I think this is just a taste of things to come. I think we're going to see big numbers. I think we're going to see power supplies like we've never seen before. The 12 pin power connector that Nvidia debuted with a 3000 series. Apparently that's like a compliant version of a new power pin that's going to be standard because of the amount of power draw future devices are going to need. So I think we need to get ready. This could be the way things are going.
I need to install some solar panels just to keep your bills down running these things.
I can't wait for gaming to get vilified in the mainstream media for being the leading contributor to climate change.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the metaverse. Well,
Bitcoin's trying to do that now, right?
Yeah, metaverse is wanting to compete. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
But just to put an idea about how bad this thing is now. So, Football Manager 2020, you can't play. 3 Assassin's Creed games, you can't play. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, you can't play. Just Cause 4. Shadows of the Tomb Raider.
Oh,
Wolfenstein Youngblood.
These are big
Life
games.
Life is Strange 2. So my final joke for the day, I've seen that Nintendo has released a lovely little Game & Watch device now that you can go and buy. You can play Zelda 1, Zelda 2, and the Game Boy Zelda, the GBA version with a little bit of colour. And for the privilege of playing these three games on a little Game & Watch style console, you can pay $75.
Oh, point me to the link.
Oh, exactly. And like,
where do I pre-order?
Well, we're too late for the pre-order, unfortunately, George. But damn. You know, if Nintendo know one thing, it's how to squeeze every dollar out of their fan base.
Yeah. Well, Knuckles has dropped off because his headphones died, but I'm sure he'd have something to say about that. But I think
he might say that's a ripoff.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll get his comments next time on the podcast. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of the year. We want everyone to send in, or we're going to have a channel specifically for, I think what we might do is get everyone to list their 5 favorite 2021 games, or at least as many as they played and enjoyed and want to nominate. And so we get some sort of point scoring system based off, how many votes different games get. If you want to rank them, maybe a ranked. What do you reckon, Dave? What's the best statistical way to work this out?
Ooh, some sort of random number generator seems like a good way to go. We get some dice rolling. We'll figure it out. We'll brainstorm.
Okay, cool. So you just list your favorite, top 5 games or whatever of 2021. Notable 5? Releases.
5 is a lot for 2021, but okay.
That's true. Okay, we'll make it 3 then. 3?
Yeah, 3 or 5 or whatever you can manage, I guess.
Yeah.
It's okay. Just put Forza Horizon 5 times.
5 times, yeah, exactly. So, notable releases of the upcoming week. We've just had some pretty big ones with Call of Duty Vanguard, which has kind of fallen under the radar quite a bit in terms of coverage. Forza Horizon 5 smashing records everywhere and review scores. Jurassic World Evolution 2, haven't checked it out at all yet. Haven't even seen much coverage of it. So that anyone seen that yet? No. Grand Theft Auto, the Trilogy Definitive Edition, getting smashed. Skyrim Special Edition. Haven't actually seen any commentary on that at this point.
Everyone's been too busy hating on the GTA remaster
to
look at any other game other than driving car and Forza Horizon 5. And now Halo's taken over the gaming world. So
yeah. Nick,
that's all we'll hear about for the next 3 days.
Nick, hopefully next episode we'll talk about his Switch port of the Knights of the Old Republic. And then, November 18, we've got Microsoft Flight Simulator Game of the Year Edition update. So that will be interesting. I'm super excited for that. That's this week. Battlefield 2042 actually fully launches to non-pre-order/trial players. And Cricket 22 Official Game of the Ashes. That's a big one for me coming at the end of November.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Myself,
and Dave and George and Nick, who is no longer here. And we'll be back in 2 weeks and probably, I don't know, will we make that our Game of the Year edition in 2 weeks' time? Because that'll be like...
be December, won't it? So, yeah.
It won't be. It'll be the 30th.
Okay, maybe the one after that then. We'll aim for the one after that to the Game of the Year.
That'll be the mid-December, so yeah.
Yeah, great. All right, guys. Catch you next time.
See you.
See ya.